Welcome to this week's episode of the Ultimate MMA Podcast. We are in for a long, long night ahead. Last week, we had not one, not two, not even three, five. We had five major MMA events broadcast on our screens. We had Cage Wars 114, Cage Wars 115, Cage Wars 116, Bellator Milan, and UFC 253. What a week we had. I'm your host, Jake Jones, and my co-host this week is taking the role on short notice. Due to our guy Sean Gilley falling sick, we gave this man a call and he stepped up to make this a two-man thing. It's him, the man behind the scenes, Liam Heffernan. How are you doing, man?
Yeah, good. In classic UFC style, I've stepped in at short notice. Let's see if I can pull it off.
Man, I'm glad you're appreciating it. I'm sure you will. I mean, before we start, the other thing I just want to note is head over to Ultimate MMA Extra tomorrow for an exclusive one-to-one interview with Bellator MMA fighter Scotland's Chris Duncan, who fights Iamic Furtado this Thursday. That's at Bellator Milan, but for now, to start our recapping stage, Liam, what did you think of all of last week's events?
The Cage Warriors trilogy was one of a kind. I mean, what a weekend for fight fans. And topping it off with UFC 253, which was, I mean, two title fights, always a lot of hype, always the possibility to be disappointed, but hell of a main card.
Well, this was end. From Thursday through till Sunday morning, pretty much, we had events. And that was genuinely, this is one of the best weekends I've had in such a long time. As I said, Thursday through to Sunday morning, we had events to watch. And I mean, Saturday, take this. I had the double laptop going, literally from 6 p.m. we had Bellator. 7, you had Cage Warriors. So I had the double, I had a laptop and a TV going, watching both them streams. And then obviously 11 o'clock, UFC comes on. Well, midnight actually it was. UFC comes on until 6 a.m. So from 6 p.m. till 6 a.m. the next day, I had 12 hours of non-stop MMA action.
What a day.
Exactly, mate. It's every fight fan's dream. So we have so much to talk about, and let's get straight into it. What did you think of UFC 253?
Yeah, I mean, it was a good card. You know, I wouldn't say it was something that was mind-blowing. But do you know what? I think on the whole, all the fights delivered. I think it was a really good main card, and it was a lot of fun to watch. There were a lot of finishes.
Absolutely, man. Let's get that positive energy going. I partially do agree with you. I understand that if you actually looked through the whole card, it wasn't groundbreaking. It wasn't like UFC 244, UFC 235, 239. Them cards where you literally look at it from prelim upwards and you go, holy shit, we've got a great night ahead. But there were some fantastic fights. And the first fight that I would like to talk about is basically, it wasn't for a title, but for me, it was the fight of the night. And I think it even got fight of the night from the UFC. Brandon Royval versus Kai Kara France. This fight was absolute fireworks. I mean, I think a lot of the eyes here were on Kai Kara France. And this was only Royval's second UFC fight. And Kai's a sought-after guy with a lot of eyes on him. He trains with City Kickboxing. He's one of them guys who many think has a bright future ahead. Now, I had Kai to win this fight. And just a small note to make, I'm at it again, and I called all these next fights wrong. It's what I do. However, one thing to note again with that, I think on Cage Warriors, I got 6 of the 7 fights correct, Bellator 8 of the 11, and UFC 7 of the 12 fights. So, I did all right last week. But back to this fight, holy hell, did Brandon Royval prove me wrong, and he looked insane on Saturday night.
Yeah.
These guys, I mean, for anyone who's watched fight, you'll know, they went immediately at it, and Royval was knocked down by a clean punch from Kai, and then as Kai went to finish it, Royval threw a spinning back fist that landed and put Kai down. It literally, that was like the immediate minute or two in the fight, and these guys, that just put us on our feet straight away. What was your thoughts on the first round?
Yeah, do you know what, on paper, this had all the makings of a great fight, and the two of them just came out swinging. I loved it. And I think had there not been two title fights at 253, I think this absolutely would have deserved a co-main billing. And do you know what, I went for Kai as well. I think he was a slightly more experienced fighter in the UFC, and on paper I guess he should have won, but what a prospect Brandon Royval is. And I think, though, regardless of the outcome, you know what, Royval got a great win on his belt, and a great start of what will probably be a very good UFC career for him. But I think this was a win-win for both of them. I don't think Kai Kara France had anything to feel bad about. You know, it's always good to get the W, but I think they're both going to go on to bigger things from here.
Well, absolutely, and we spoke a bit about the first round there, and what was to come from that was fantastic. Royval went on to land another knockdown, and that, I think that was from a knee that he threw in round one. And then in round two, he was able to keep up this scary, intense pressure on Cara France, and then ultimately finish a fight with a beautiful guillotine. When Kai tried to take him down, he just jumped straight into a standing guillotine, and Kai was forced to the mat and forced to tap. And there was other moments in the fight as well where Kai was kind of landing an overhand right, the one that knocked Royval down, but then later on in the fight when Kai was trying to land that, it was hitting, but Royval was able to keep coming forward.
Yeah.
He was able to take the punch and basically put the pressure on. It was honestly 7 minutes in heaven for those who watch MMA. I'd urge anyone to go watch the highlights of this fight, because it's one of the fights you just knew it was going to be fight of the night. The moment it ended, you thought, if anyone can top that tonight, we're in for a good night.
Yeah.
And my main talking point here is what is next for Royval. You've mentioned it. With Kai Kara-France, there's not a lot to be ashamed of here. He will go on and he'll still get a great fight, but I absolutely love this guy. I think he's going to be a very, very, very dangerous guy in the flyweight division. In his UFC debut, he submits Tim Elliott, the Ultimate Fighter winner and the former Titan FC champion. Then he goes on to beat Kai Kara-France in just his second bout. Now, he's the former LFA champion, and that's an organisation producing some fantastic hidden talents across the globe. So now Royval puts himself 7th in the rankings, and I think he's looking for someone like Pantoja, Perez, or even one of them top 3 next, because he's really put on a performance that you go, yeah, eyes are on you now, you're getting eyes to the flyweight division, and that's what we want to see. He really puts himself in a great picture for on Saturday night, and I genuinely can't wait to see what he does next.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, you know, the rankings, you can argue about the fairness of them all you like, but at the end of the day, you don't get to 7th in the division after 2 fights without good reason. So this is a guy that the UFC want to push, and he's given them every reason to. You know, I think when you look at him, and I think also Jiří Procházka in, yep, in light heavyweight, both of them have had, they're both now top 10 after, you know, what, 1 or 2 fights each in the UFC. You know, these are two guys that have future champion written all over them, and I'm very excited to see who they put Royval up with next, because when you look at that flyweight division, I mean, it's just unreal. You've got Figueiredo now, who's the champ, and any one of those in the top 10 could have a shout to fight him, to be honest.
Absolutely. Well, even you've got Moreno in there, Perez, Pantoja, yeah, Askar, Askarov. As you said, it's looking a really nice division at the moment. And you also took the words out of my mouth when you mentioned Jiří Procházka. He's the only other guy I know at the moment who's come in after one fight and put himself 7th. Now, another thing I love about this is that these are people who are champions in different promotions. So Royval, the LFA champion, and Procházka was the Rising champion. And that's what I love, is they were champions. They were at the top of their level in another promotion. And sometimes you see like someone like Nate Wood. I love Nate Wood, but he went from Cage Warriors champion to then trying to work his way up. Same with Jack Shaw, trying to work their way up. Now, they are good enough anyway. So I love that the UFC have now put some other champions from different promotions into big fights, and it's paid off. It really worked, really, really has. But next up, let's talk about some champions. Another fight that I called wrong, but I called it for all the right reasons, I'm going to say. Blachowicz versus Reyes. What a champion we have here. I'm saying I called it wrong for all the right reasons, because I actually said last week I wanted Jan to win this. I thought it would be a brilliant champion, and I thought he was a very, very deserving champion. Poland's second UFC champ, and what a reception he received. I honestly thought that Reyes was going to win this fight. I thought that he had the skills all around to definitely better him. But honestly, how can you not like him? How can you not like Blachowicz? Those hands really do scream Polish power. What did you think?
Yeah, do you know what? I'm blaming you entirely for going for Reyes here, because up until I listened to the podcast last week, I was torn between them. Because on the one hand, you had Reyes, who, in my opinion, he beat Jones when he took him on in February. But then you've got Jan, who, you know, you look at his record over the last sort of year or so, and the guy just packs unbelievable power. And really, I didn't know who to call. I really didn't. I'm actually really happy that Gan won. I think the manner that he did it was pretty much textbook for him. I don't think you could have called it any other way if you thought he was going to win.
Yep.
But it was a great fight all round. I think the two of them were fighting like champions. I don't think Reyes is going to get a rematch anytime soon because he's had two title fights now and he's lost both. But there'll be people out there who say he deserves it with good reason. But I think Blachowicz is going to be a good champ.
Absolutely. And I saw an amazing stat earlier. I think it's between 2014 to 2017. Jan's UFC career was 2-4. So he'd had 2 wins, 4 losses. He turned his career around at that point, and since 2017, he's gone 8-1. Wow. And I mean, that's awesome to see. As I said, the comparison between that is like, it was one of them kind of motivational posts like, never give up. And you think, actually, yeah, fair play to you, mate. 2-4, thinking you're probably going to be cut, to 9 fights down the line, 8-1, and being the champion. Fair play to you. Yeah. I mean, he practically beat Reyes from the moment the bell rang to the moment the fight was stopped. He was able to land a lovely 3-piece combination, the 1-2 with a left and a right, and then this excruciating body kick that literally, after one kick, maybe two, left Reyes with this horrendous, almost bleeding bruise on the side of his body. Mm. And I'm sure he's caused some serious damage there. And not that it's going to be long last or anything like that, but you could just tell that instantly that might have been a broken rib or anything like that. And he was able to land that combination a fair few times. Reyes looked lost in this fight, in my opinion. He looked like he never really got his tempo going, and I think he was quite surprised at this. I think Reyes could have dictated the fight more, and he could have been able to land some great blows to slow Jan down, but I think overall he kind of was just surprised with the power that Jan has, and also the fact that Jan doesn't just go for one punch. He does bring his combinations together, and that's very hard to fight against. Jan literally picked him apart, and I don't know if you saw, but Jan sent Reyes into the pit bull realm just before the knockdown. He landed the punch, and you could see immediately that Dom's nose was broken. Mm. Even from a side angle, it's dipped in. You think, oh, that's awful. And he backed off from there. Literally, you could see his nose crumble. And when he's backing away, when he's retreating, you could just see his nose wobbling. And you think, oh, God, how are you even fighting with that on there? Hats off to Reyes for putting up with that, and he took some punishment. The punch that wobbled him made him do a little chicken dance, and that was really the beginning of the end for him. But as I said, you can't fault Reyes there. You can't say, like, he had the heart to try and keep going.
Yeah.
But Jan was just too powerful. What a performance. So, sorry, Karen.
No, I think that I agree with you. I think Jan was in control of the fight the whole time. I think Reyes is going to get unfairly remembered in that fight. I think that he put on a better performance than he'll probably get credit for. I think maybe he wasn't attacking the fight as much as he could have done, but when you've got the power of Jan, and like you say, he wasn't just going for like one punch knockout like a lot of guys with power do. He was going for the combinations, and I think probably Reyes's downfall was that he potentially believed all the hype around him, and he possibly expected himself to win. I think that's maybe why he lost. He didn't give Jan enough credit. But
and you have to appreciate as well that Reyes is a guy who's never actually been finished. He lost to Jones, but as I said, many people think he won that. He's never outright lost a fight. So when you came up against a guy like that, maybe he did underestimate him a little bit, think, do you know what, I am unstoppable.
Yeah.
And you can't think that against these guys.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned there as well, what is next? I mean, for me, for Reyes, I'd like to see him face someone like Rakic next. Rakic is coming off a win. Reyes coming off a loss, a title loss as well. Reyes is 12-2, Rakic 13-2. In my opinion, that sets up a decent title challenger. And in the meantime, for me, Blachowicz has to face the winner of Santos versus Teixeira. Mm-hmm. The fight is not too far in the future. Blachowicz has already said he'd like to avenge his loss to Santos. I like the fight. I think it makes sense. The only hindrance is what social media is showing at the moment. Jan has called out both Jones and Cormier following this victory, which obviously is the money fight and the fight that makes more people tune in. But what do you think about it?
Look, I think that would be a great fight to watch, either one, Jan versus Jones or Cormier. I don't think either one is going to happen. I think DC is done. I think he seems pretty final about that. And I think if Jones had any intention of still fighting at light heavyweight, he never would have given up the title. I think he's in heavyweight, and that's that. I think Jan is probably calling them out for a bit of publicity. I just don't see a world in which them fights are gonna happen.
Absolutely, mate. I think you have hit the nail on the head there. I've said the same thing. I don't see it happening. Both want heavyweight, not light heavyweight. Jones could make light heavyweight, but why would he do that? As he said, he wouldn't have given up the belt to then come back down again. It doesn't really make sense.
Yeah.
And I think Cormier might well be done. And if he isn't done, I still don't see him returning to light heavyweight. I think he returns to heavyweight. And that's why I mentioned a second ago, for me, Santos has to face... Blachowicz has to face Santos or Teixeira. That's the fight to make. And that's the next, in my opinion, like light heavyweight champion.
The next
championship fight.
I'd be a bit miffed if I was Santos or Teixeira, won that fight and then wasn't given the title match, you know?
Exactly, no, I totally agree. The only thing I could see happening with this kind of beef going on now is potentially, say Jones goes up to heavyweight, wins, beats Miocic, beats Ngannou, maybe defends it one more time, then he goes for a retirement fight to make himself the double champ, goes back down to light heavyweight with the heavyweight belt underneath him, and goes for a double championship. If he can do that, then he would sign off his career perfectly. That's the only way I kind of see Jan and Jones being made, because once more, Jones wouldn't have gone up weight to then come back down in one fight. It doesn't make sense. So I think that's what we see happen. But let's move on to our main event of the evening. What on earth happened here, mate? I said this fight was going to go one of two ways, Adesanya decision or Costa KO, and it went neither. Like, I have no clue kind of what I watched. I'm not going to lie, I was slightly disappointed in the fight, but not because of the result. Adesanya looked immense, he really did. His striking was crisp, his kicks were great, and he barely got touched. However, for me, Costa just didn't do enough. I liked the showmanship in the first round. I got excited and I thought, okay, what's in store here? And I was getting myself riled up, and then I thought, nothing's happening. And that's why I was disappointed, because Costa never really let his hands go. The big thing that I took was there was a few times that he backed Adesanya up to the cage and literally followed his movements, like tracing him around. He literally had him cornered, effectively. But then he just didn't throw anything. He had him backed up, and he didn't let any of his hands go. He didn't even throw out a jab. He just kind of held his guard up. So maybe his coaches had seen something in the build-up. Maybe he was a bit afraid of Adesanya's counter-striking. But I think he needed to trust in his hands a little bit more, and he needed to let them fly. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying this would have been easy against Izzy, but I don't think Costa did enough to scare him. Izzy looked confident the entire fight, and as he said, he had to remind everyone what he can do. Now, we saw Romero land one punch against Izzy that Izzy backed off against. And you thought, there's the power. That's what Izzy's being very, very, relenting about? I guess, like, backing away from.
Yeah.
Now, Costa didn't really give Izzy any reasons to not strike with him. And as I said, I just wish that Costa had done a little bit more, because I think Izzy looked awesome. I think he's probably incredibly hard to fight. However, I don't think Costa did anything to prove why he was in it. I don't even know how many punches he actually landed. He landed a few leg kicks. That was it. What was your thoughts?
Yeah, it was a bit of a disappointing showing from Costa, really. I felt like he spent the whole fight kind of dodging and looking for that opportunity to really throw. And then, as you said, when he seemed to have a clear chance to do that and to really let go, he didn't. I'm not sure why that was, because I get, you know, for all the showmanship and the going back and forth before the fight, I think these are two fighters that understand what the other one can do when given a chance. So I get on Costa's part, he was probably a little bit reticent, but at the same time, he's the challenger. You know, you don't often win a decision as a challenger unless it is absolutely overwhelming, like Volkanovski. Costa needed to go out there and really show why he deserved that belt, and he didn't. And, you know, in the end, Adesanya, as he said in his post-fight interview, he went out there to prove that he wasn't as boring as the Romero fight made him look. And he did just that. He saw his chance and he finished the fight. So, you know, I'm not Adesanya's biggest fan, but fair dues to the guy.
Well, you've mentioned it there, not being Adesanya's biggest fan. I'm going to sound a negative Nelly to our new champion. But I will focus on one positive first. The question mark kick that he throws is so... it's incredible. The speed that he has on that, the way he whips that high kick in, it's just... It's absolutely beautiful to watch. It genuinely is. You think he throws it faster than you can throw a jab. So that is something that I can understand. That even if you were Costa, you don't want to throw. You want to keep your distance away. Because if he can throw that in at you, as I said, I think most people are getting caught by that. At the speed that Adesanya throws it and the accuracy, I think it knocks you out. But I have two talking points. My big negative Nellies. I have, firstly, Adesanya's actions. And secondly, what is next. Right. I never used to mind Adesanya that much. I thought he was a little bit fake in that, but when I used to see him be genuine, I thought, yeah, he seems a good guy. But immediately after knocking Costa out, he quote-unquote rode Costa. Now, for me, that doesn't sit well at all. I don't like that in any manner. You've beaten the guy, you've proved why you're the best, but to do something like that, why make it a disrespectful thing? Genuinely, one of the things that went through my head is that in some cultures, that could be genuinely considered incredibly offensive, and in general, in the sport of MMA, you never need to see a thing like that happen.
Yeah.
That, to me, I really don't get that. I really don't like that. I think it's very, very disrespectful on Costa's behalf, no matter what's happened before, anything like that. That's really not a good thing to see. And it, to me, it should be punished. For me as well, he lost a lot of my respect doing that. You don't do it at all. But to further that, he went up to Captain Eric Albarracin, Costa's head coach, and he said, he had a few words with him, and then he said he's going to come all over his face or something like that. And you thought, mate, what's that about? What are you doing? What? I don't get that. I get different types of humour. I get quick responses, but that is not quick. It's not witty. It's just once more disrespectful and childish.
Yeah.
Take, for example, McGregor and Mendes. When Mendes said to him, Connor, do you know what wrestling is? And Connor's response instantly was, I'll wrestle my balls on your forehead. Now, that was funny because it was an instant response. It was quick.
Yeah.
It was in a press conference. This was immediately after a guy's knocked out on the floor and you go up and say something like that, which once more isn't witty. It's just kind of like a child in school. It's the type of thing they would say.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to make it clear there. I liked Adesanya. I never wanted to see him lose. But something like that crosses the line for me, and it needs to be taken away from MMA. There's a difference between trash talk and then being disrespectful. And as I said, if you took that in some cultures, that's going to cause a lot of a big fuss. And as I said, for me, Adesanya needs to reflect on that. And I personally am not a fan of that at all. But that is now out of my system. I'm calm. I'm chill. Let's move on to my second talking point. What is next for me? Adesanya gets the winner of Whittaker versus Cannonier, and Costa gets the winner of Till versus Hermanson.
Yeah.
This makes the most sense, in my opinion. Whittaker deserves the rematch already, but if Cannonier can beat him, he definitely deserves a shot. Then I'd say Till or Hermanson are one big win away from the title, and that is where Costa stands. That's where he's at. He is their big win, but also, if he can beat someone like that, he puts himself straight back in there as well. My biggest problem... who the hell can beat Israel Adesanya? I looked through the whole division and I honestly don't see anyone who can at this current moment. If Costa couldn't, I don't think many others can. The only guy who I think may is Till, but I still favour Adesanya there in that moment. I think it's just a fight that we want to see. Every UK MMA fan, most MMA fans, just want to see two of the best strikers face off against each other. But other than that, as I said, my biggest hindrance to whoever's next is it still doesn't matter for me at the moment. I think Adesanya's so good. There's no one in the division who I look at with their wrestling ability and go, yeah, that's where they beat him. Because you had a guy like Derek Brunson, a phenomenal wrestler, who you saw what he did to Edmund Shahbazyan. Edmund had a similar style in terms of his striking, and Brunson was able to just destroy him. Now, Adesanya, when he fought Brunson... destroyed Brunson. He literally picked him apart. I mean, that is a highlight reel finish. This is what I mean. I've really struggled to think in that division at the moment, other than Till, who gives Adesanya a hard fight.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're right. I think Whittaker and Jared, the winner of that gets the next title shot. I think that's just that, that makes sense. I don't think Till is as close to a title shot as you think. I think if he beats Hermanson, I think give him Romero. I think he's got a few fights to wait before he gets that title chance. And Adesanya is that good that I just don't think Till is ready yet for that. Like, he's an experienced guy, but I think he needs a few more wins in middleweight before he's... Otherwise, I think he's just a lamb to the slaughter when he goes against Adesanya, to be honest. And I'd love to see Till take the fight a lot further than Costa or Romero took it. But I think we're clutching at straws. I genuinely don't see anyone right now who we could honestly say could take that title from him.
No, I think that's a very, very fair evaluation. I do get that, obviously, the UFC, even us UK guys, we push Till to titles. I genuinely don't think I do that for the sake that I don't think he's always deserving of it. But I think, realistically, when you think about the way the UFC push him, I think it is possible. But, as you said, Romero might be the next fight for him. And I think that would make a good fight. I think Hermanson can't be overlooked there either, because he could cause some problems. But overall, I think it boils down to what you just said. We're clutching at straws. We can talk all about trying to be matchmakers here, but overall, who actually is ready for Adesanya? We'll pose the question out there for everyone. If you guys can tell us who's going to beat Adesanya, we'll put a little poll out there, then we'll find out. Well, we're going to move on now. Before we start our recaps, before we move on to any previews for next week, I just want to talk about a few standout Cage Warriors performances. Now, obviously, Liam stepping in this week. Liam stepped in last minute. I don't expect you to break all this down, but I'm just going to shine on a few fights that I want to get people talking about. I want to get people just watching as well, because you've got to see these guys. They are going to be future champions. Firstly, you had Ian Garry versus George McManus in Cage Warriors. I mean, Ian's gone 4-0 now. I think he TKO'd him in the second round. Ian is one of them guys. He's already been compared to Conor McGregor by the Cage Warriors owner, who, nope, obviously found McGregor when McGregor was in Cage Warriors. So Garry is one of these guys. He is going to be a future champion. He's already, me and him were speaking recently, he set out a 5-fight plan to get to the UFC, and it's basically he wants a step up in opponent next. He wants the belt after that. He wants to defend the belt. He wants to step up to middleweight, get that belt in Cage Warriors, which makes him 9-0, and then either defend that belt at 9-0 or take his UFC opportunity. Now, moving on from that, we have Paul Hughes. Paul Hughes defeated Aidan Stephen. He went 6-0, and he, honestly, this is the fight out of them that I'd probably tell anyone to go watch, because it was just awesome. Like, Paul Hughes is a serious talent. I think he's pretty much got all finishes throughout his career, and generally, he just looks incredible. The fight started off kind of back and forth, and it was good, and then come the second round, Paul Hughes just shone. Just the quality that man has at this age, I think he's 23 years old, it's incredible to watch. He landed this body shot just to knock Stephen down, and oh my god, it was Tyson-esque. He just leaned into it and whipped the body shot. This is at featherweight, but you could just tell how painful that looked. As I said, Paul Hughes looked awesome, and once more, it's another fight you guys have to just get out there, just watch, and you'll see what I'm talking about. Moving on from there, you have Mason Jones, 10-0, double champ now in Cage Warriors. He's got the lightweight and the welterweight belt. The only other guy to have done that was McGregor, I believe. Wow. JJ might have done that there as well. There was two people who have done it. Sorry, no, Dan Hardy. Dan Hardy and Conor McGregor, the only two guys who have ever held two championships in Cage Warriors. Mason Jones joins them now at 10-0. He defeated Adam Proctor, who'd only been beaten once before. That was, honestly, this is awesome. I think it was the first round as well. He's so dominant. He's so good. He's a black belt in pretty much every martial arts that he's fucking training in. So, once more, guys, get onto the Mason Jones hype. He's a lovely lad. I'm genuinely, like, you need to look at him, because he's the next guy to join the UFC, and he's going to cause some massive, massive problems. If there's anything from them fights you want to talk about, Liam? If not, I've got two more.
No, I think Mason Jones was a standout to me. You know, seeing that he'd won his second championship, I think he's got UFC written all over him now. So sign him up. I want to see him fight.
Also, first Welsh double champ, I believe. In major promotions, first Welsh double champ. He's making history, and he is going to cause some problems. Now, the other two fights I just wanted to note on was Luke Shanks beating Fadeen. So Luke Shanks has now got the flyweight title. He's 7-1. And he dominated the champion. I think there was something crazy, like one of the scorecards was 50-41. So, like, that just shows how dominant he actually was. And we were speaking about it a minute ago, but the flyweight division, it's looking good at the moment. Add someone like Shanks into that. That's what I want to see. Yeah. I want to see these guys going for their respective divisions. And, as I said, putting on performances like that against the current champ, there's no doubt he's going to have eyes on him soon. Final guy to talk about. Once more, the lighter divisions, bantamweight, 135 pounds, Jack Cartwright. Demolished Rod, I think his name is Gerardo Fanny. He's gone 9-0 now. He demolished him within a round, and he, once more, looks awesome. Striking, incredible, but he's actually from a wrestling background. I believe he wrestled with GB, and he looks so good. All around, he looks like a top talent. So they are just the five guys from Cage Warriors there that anyone who watches MMA, anyone who follows Cage Warriors will know these guys already. But if you're just listening to the podcast on an off chance, please go watch them fights because they were genuinely top. They were brilliant to watch. And as I said, their next fights are still going to do amazing things. Jack Cartwright wins his next fight. He goes 10-0. Once more, you've got another bantamweight prospect coming up there. We've seen guys like Nate Wood and Jack Shaw join the UFC as former champions. That's the future for Cartwright too. But now we need to talk about some upcoming events in MMA, and sadly, it's a bit of a sore sight from what we had last week. But it would be unfair to say there's no good fights. We will cross between a few Bellator and a few UFC fights here, and overall, there's a few more that we're going to add in there that we're not going to break down, but I'm just going to shine upon them a little bit. First things first, we go to the UFC. A few bouts here worth mentioning. Finally, we get Holly Holm, the former champ, versus Irene Aldana. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think this is going to be a good fight. You know, I think it's easy to criticize this card, because do you know what? I don't know if I'd put Holm and Aldana as a main event, but it has potential to be a good one. And you know, we can't forget, you know, Holm. Yeah, possibly at the latter stages of her career now, but she's a former champ. She's still up there in the rankings. I was just checking. She's second behind only Jermaine Durandamy, who, by the way, is also fighting on this card. Yes. So as far as shaping the women's bantamweight division on Saturday goes, this is the card to watch. We could, personally, I think if Jermaine and Holly both win, that's the next matchup to make. Unless, of course, Dana White has other plans for the Nunes' next title fight. But, you know, I feel like Holm is probably going to win. It would be a surprise if Aldana did, but
you can't rule her out, for sure.
You can't.
Well, I think you've just hit the nail on the head perfectly about this card. It's probably the card to shape up the bantamweight division, and I think that's a great way to look at it. If we're going to take something from it, that is it. I think, yeah, Holly's second. I said this. I think she does probably warrant a main event for a fight night. I think she... it's possibly clutching at straws with that again, but you can understand why Holly Holm can drag some fans in. But for me, it's the fights that follow that don't live up to basically being a fight night card. Mm. Holm being a main event, you go, yeah, okay, yeah, I'll watch it. Then if you got a bit of a shit card below that, you might go, yeah, this is a bit of a weak effort. And basically, I said Aldana Holm, it might shape up some things in the division. I think it's going to be a good fight for both girls. I think, as you mentioned, it's going to probably be Holm's last run. And if she gets it, I would like to see her maybe go for another shot. But overall, that's probably the main fight for me on the card that I actually am interested to find out what happens. Mm. Other than that, we've got a few more fights to mention. You've got Jorgen De Castro returning against Carlos Felipe, and then Dequan Townsend facing the 9-0 Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series signee, Dusko Todorovic. Now, Jorgen De Castro is not a main event, co-main event, sorry. He's really not. I think I like the guy. I think he knocked out Justin Taffer in an incredible fashion. But other than that, I mean, he lost to Greg Hardy in a really boring fight. Yeah. I'm glad to see Jorgen back against a decent 8-1 guy. But overall, it's not a co-main event. It's really not. And that's, unfortunately, I think that lets Holm and Aldana down a little bit. Then you've got Dequan Townsend, who, in my opinion, never really impressed me in the UFC. He's always looked a little bit sluggish. The only thing I take from that then is I look forward to seeing what Todorovic has to offer there. Because 9-0, coming off Dana White's 2-0 contender series, he could potentially say go 10-0 in his first UFC bout and then push for some decent fights. And they do need to spice up the division a little bit. I'm quite surprised that Todorovic and Aldana are both the underdogs on most sites at the moment. I think Todorovic, as I said, I think potentially he's going as the underdog so that betting companies are looking at it and going, oh yeah, hopefully people don't notice that. When in my opinion, he's definitely going to win that. The only other one would be, I guess, Aldana Holm. I think it's probably a bit closer than a big fight difference. I think Holm probably takes the fight, but I think Aldana could definitely get a win as well. I just think Holm's probably better all around. We'll just have to see. For me, though, although that's only a very short breakdown of all these UFC fights, I actually want to turn to Bellator this weekend once more to make them our main event. In Milan, we have Cal Alenor versus James Gallagher. And what a fight this is, because it may determine our next European bantamweight contender. So Gallagher's 10-1, Cal's 8-2. Eyes are going to be on James here, but you cannot underestimate Cal by any means. Cal beat Nathan Grayson in his debut and put on a great performance. Now, this is the fourth time this fight has been made, and we have seen the relationship take some interesting twists and turns. They've had a bit of back and forth online debates between each other, and then face to face, have had times where they're very respectful, and other times where it gets a little bit fiery between them. Now, James has struggled against against Ricky Bandeas, a bigger guy and a long guy for 135 pounds of vision, and it resulted in him being knocked out. Cal has that exact same style. He's long. He's 6 foot for 135 pounds, which is crazy. But then Cal has even admitted this before. He can sometimes play a bit of a risk and give up his back. And James is so good at that. This is what I love about this fight, is that they're both kind of facing each other's weaknesses. And I think it's going to be a great fight. What do you think is going to go down here?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good one to watch, as you say. I think we're going to see a knockout, but I couldn't tell you who it's going to be. I'm excited to watch it. Again, it's one of those, I think it's going to be a bit of a toss of a coin. All I know is it could potentially be a fight of the night, you know?
Absolutely. Well, for me, I have to go with my guy Cal Alenor here. And the reason I say that is you've just said you think there's going to be a knockout. I think he can shock the world, and I think he can hand James his second loss. James is an incredible fighter, an incredible grappler, and generally a great prospect for the sport. But I think that Cal can take a lot from the Bandeas loss and try to exploit James in the striking department. Don't get me wrong, I don't think it will come from like a sidekick to the face like Bandeas did, but I definitely think Cal will be able to hit him with a jab cross combo and maybe pressure James out of there. And that's because Cal, as I said, is a longer fighter. James loves the grappling world, and I think if Cal used to do a lot of boxing when he was younger, I think if he can utilise that, take some stuff from the Bandeas loss, potentially get some leg kicks in there, slow James down a bit, I think he could genuinely catch James. I think he's got the power to do it, and I think obviously James's key to victory is to try and submit him. We'll have to see which way that goes, but just a few more fights to mention, but we're not going to break these down, we're just going to say these ones to keep an eye out for. We have, as mentioned earlier, he's gonna be on the Ultimate MMA Extra podcast tomorrow, but we have the 7-0 Chris Duncan this Thursday as he faces the powerful Iamic Furtado. Also featuring on that card is a women's flyweight title eliminator as Kate Jackson takes on Denise Kielholtz. The winner of that, for me, gets the champion McFarlane. Kate Jackson, I know she's just recently fought her and lost to that, but Kielholtz is an amazing looking prospect for the sport. Again, I think she's 5-1 in her Bellator career. She can get the win over Jackson. I do see her facing McFarlane next. Another thing to mention about the previous fight with Duncan and Furtado is Kiefer Crosby was Furtado's last opponent. That shows that they see a bit of promise in that guy. So if Duncan can put him out, and he's finished every single one of his pro fights, then once more, I think we see another rising contender in Duncan. A few undefeated guys are also featuring on the Thursday night for Bellator in Milan. And then you've also got Kiefer Crosby in the third fight down. And you've got Charlie Ward also returning alongside many other SBG standouts on Saturday night. So that's Kiefer Crosby and Charlie Ward on Saturday night and loads of SBG guys on Saturday night. And then on Thursday night, you've got a lot of undefeated guys. Novenyi, I think his name is. Another guy who once more undefeated 5-0 and looking very, very good in Bellator. Over in the UFC as well, we do have another fight that I would just, once more, not break down, but like to shine upon. Tom Breeze once more returns to the octagon to try and get his rhythm going again. At one stage, he was undefeated, looking like a massive prospect for the sport. So I'd like to see him back in there and hopefully getting things going. But
for now, I've just noticed. So I'm on. This is via Tapology. It's not on the UFC website, but there is a British fighter making his debut on the main card this Saturday on Fight Night. It's a guy called Cameron Else. So he's coming from Fusion, and he's coming off the back of a 6-fight win streak, all of which were finished in the first round, and now they're giving him a shot on the main card on a fight night. So that could be a very interesting fight to watch.
Well, I love that you mentioned Cam. So Cam actually is quite an interesting guy. I think him and Nate would get on quite well. Now, Cam had actually said that he stepped in last time out for Nate Wood. So when Nate was, I can't remember who it was he was facing, but in Nate's last fight, basically, Cam put out online that he signed to fight Nate Wood and blah, blah, blah. It turned out that wasn't the truth at all. However, overall, it seemed that Cam had actually obviously been approached by the UFC. So that's quite a nice thing that he's got the fight now. British guy coming up on the main card. I'm glad to see it. I think quite a lot of people had eyes on that situation because they were kind of looking at it going, why is he lying saying that he's fighting Nate Wood? Maybe he wasn't. Maybe he was offered the fight, but maybe the team didn't accept it. So I like that they've given him a chance now, and I hope that he does well. As you said, was that a 6-fight win streak?
Yeah, 6 fights.
And I believe he's 11-4, is he?
Check. He's 10-4. But what I think is so interesting about this guy is of those 6 fights, he's not a one-trick pony. He's had 2 submissions, he's had 3 KOs and 1 referee stoppage.
Well, Cam, we are backing you out there. You have Ultimate MMA behind you, and we're looking forward to seeing you fight, my friend. But, guys, that is all we have time for now. Thank you for tuning into the Ultimate MMA podcast. Make sure to like, share, and subscribe to us, and be sure to tune in next week where we'll recap the results of this weekend's card and preview the next card, which takes place on Saturday the 10th of October. Marlon Moraes faces Corey Sandhagen in the bantamweight division. Now, that weekend, we also have the groundbreaking, record-making event in Paris as Bellator MMA hosts the first ever major French MMA event since its legalization in January 2020. I've been your host, Jake Jones, and I want to say a massive thank you to our co-host this week, Liam Heffernan, for stepping in and bringing the fun.
Thank you very much.
Well, be sure to let us know any feedback you have for the podcast and let us know which guest you'd like me, Sean, Liam, and his dogs to speak to over the next few weeks. Thank you guys very much and take care.